Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business insurance. They'll take care of all of it for you. Make sure you get the right insurance so you're covered at the best price. And if there's anything that happens along the way, they will take care of it because they are the best in the business. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Play-by-play call of the day. Blake Bortles to Dede Westbrook.
Dropping to throw is Blake. Looking, fires a little crossing route, caught wide open. Dede Westbrook into Patriots territory. Stays in bounds at a 40. Dede Westbrook inside the 30-yard line, along the left sideline, inside the 10, to the 5, into the end zone, touchdown. Bortles to Dede Westbrook for the touchdown.
That's on the Jaguars radio network, as if you couldn't tell. Our play-by-play call today. All right, Doug in Wellsboro is here. Doug, welcome. Great to hear from you again.
How did you know off the top of the head that 95-yard pass play was the longest in Penn State history? How did you know that?
Because when Barkley went for 92 yards in the Fiesta Bowl, I described it as the longest play from scrimmage in Penn State history.
Is it just play, you know, period? Is it just play, period?
The longest play from scrimmage in the history of Penn State football. So Belton had done it from 92. Barkley then in the Fiesta Bowl tied it. And when he crossed the goal line, I said it because I described the Belton play. So I'd done that play. Now, I did not do the Bill Hess to Bob Higgins play in 1919, despite what you may think, Doug.
I went back and looked that up. I thought I had you on Saturday. I thought, man, Steve's wrong about this. That Bill Belton run was got to be almost, I thought they were backed up to the goal line, but that was only 92. Yep. But you were right. And that Higgins thing, I looked too. They said it was 92, but it was actually 95 is what they said.
Well, the George play was 95. So,
okay.
That's the longest play from scrimmage in the history of Penn State football.
That was impressive. That was almost up with the Purdue lateral thing.
Oh, thanks. Well, that's fine. I mean, it was 12-0 was the final in that game, so you know it wasn't that big of a play. But I did get most of the guys right.
Hey, something else. C.J. Thorpe played pretty early on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Connor McGovern, okay. Or they just want to work in CJ.
He's fine. They want to work Thorpe in because Thorpe had earned the right to get in there early. And you got to remember, part of what they're doing with the team, Doug, and this is where James comes in. The players don't have to know this. It's the fact that he knows this. He understands that they're playing three games in a 12-13-day stretch, and the last one's coming up this week. The door was open to managing reps of players on the field against Kent State to keep that down to a minimum if he could, and he did.
It looks like he did the same thing with the Miles Sanders come out of the half, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, Miles was limited on reps, and Miles didn't. I think Miles got into some. What, Mark Allen went first, and did Ricky Slade go second? I'm trying to remember. Then it was Miles. But again, that's the same thing, just managing reps. You know, in other words, there's no need for Miles Sanders to carry the ball 25 times today. No need to do that. Mark Allen had a nice rhythm. He had a career-high 62 yards rushing. They got Ricky Slade in a little bit. It was great to see Jonathan Thomas get in there. And part of that was managing the number of reps the guys got because there was no need to take it beyond a certain number.
Yeah. Tommy Stevens. I knew he redshirted. Is there any way they can use that four-game game rule that was implemented this year, or since he redshirted, does that nullify that? He's not applicable to him?
Yes, that's exactly right, the latter part. The red shirt's already been used. So the 4 games that you're talking about doesn't kick in for a player like that. It would kick in, and I've used the example of Jalen Hurts at Alabama. Jalen Hurts at Alabama played both his freshman and sophomore seasons. He's never redshirted. So if he played 4 games this year and then never played again for this season, he'd have 2 years of eligibility remaining. Tommy Stephens doesn't fall into that category because he's already used his redshirt year. Are
they going to do the same thing with Justin Shorter? Are they going to use that 4-game rule?
We're going to see what they want to do with Justin Shorter. Justin played for the first time on Saturday, as did Jahan Dotson and Daniel George. If they feel comfortable with what they have at the wide receiver spot, and it's not just looking at Polk, Hamler, and Johnson, it's also looking at Cam Sullivan Brown, DeAndre Tompkins, and Mack Hippenhammer. If they feel good about that group of 6 guys, then they might manage George, Dotson, and Shorter and keep them within that 4-game limit. Right? Now, if something happens where one of them, something happens either performance-wise or something happens with them where somebody gets bumped up, now you may have to change how you feel about certain guys moving forward. But as of right now, I don't think there's any urgency to change that at the moment.
Okay. Hey, last thing. Can they refuse this Friday night game, or are they locked into it because the Big Ten says they have to play it? I know they're not going to play any home Friday night games, but away games, can Sandy say no, that they're actually not going to do this? Like, I think Michigan did, didn't they?
Michigan said no to home games. I think Ohio State did too, although Ohio State opened the season with a Thursday game last year at Indiana. But I'm going to guess that the Big Ten is not going to keep sending the same teams on the road to play these games. In other words, Penn State's done its part. Now it's somebody else's turn to go do it. And I think that's you can't keep doing it to the same team. And I think at some point you've got to say yay or nay to something like that. Now they are locked into doing some of these games on Fox Sports 1. They do have a time slot to fill. But for example, will you ask Michigan State to do it? Will you ask Michigan to do it? In other words, playing a Friday night on the road, not at home. I would think that you have to rotate schools to do it. You can't keep asking the same school to do it to be the road team.
And I know Michigan State generally plays like a Friday night game at the beginning of the year or something. They have in the past couple seasons.
Yeah, which is fine.
This Friday night stuff's got to go. How am I going to get from the Wellsboro game back and watch you guys and get your pregame and stuff? How's that going to happen?
Well, just use the police escort you use every week. Right? Now, I'd like to point out, Doug, that a real police escort, normally the car is in front of you, not in back of you.
You know how big Wellsboro is?
Well, how big you... here's the better question. Do I know how big you are in Wellsboro?
It's bigger than the gaslight in Wellsboro, man.
I'm a legend in Wellsboro, Steve. Believe me.
Hey, so look, the game starts at 9. You know it won't start till probably 9:12. Game in Wellsboro, probably be done 9:15. You know,
7:15. You'll be home. We're gonna mercy rule them 7:15.
Okay, mercy rule them. You'll have all the snacks already bought. You know, because I know you've got individuals that go over to Brewers Outlet and take care of that for you and bring it up to Wellsboro for you. Because I mean, you are a big deal there. And then from there, you'll be able to just sit down, enjoy it, or maybe if it's a little delayed, you might have to listen to it on the radio on the way back. And we'll try to do the best we can to make you feel like you're there.
Okay, I'm counting on you.
Who's Wellsboro get Friday night? Who they got?
The one down by Munster. Hughesville.
Oh, yeah. You should mercy rule them. Hughesville's down this year.
Are they?
Yeah. A lot of green. Be a lot of green on the field Friday night.
Well, listen to you guys.
We were talking off air, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, listen to you guys. I mean, you're sandbagging teams. Wow.
No, just Hughesville's having a rough year. Wellsboro just keeps on clicking up there in the northern tier.
I've got 8 text messages here from the Hughesville coach. Doesn't like you.
We keep clicking until we get out of the northern tier. Then we got to play like teams like South Williamsport, and of course Southern's in our region. So that pretty much stops everything right there.
Yeah,
Southern Columbia.
Yeah.
Southern Columbia.
Yeah.
Where do they keep finding those kids? Oh my God.
All right, that's all I have for today, Steve.
Doug, I appreciate it very much. Any quick message for the Soup? Because I know you're really kind of a closet fan.
Yeah, tell him to make my Brewer's Outlet delivery on time.
Yes.
He was late.
He's been late the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, imagine how we felt for years. So, I mean, let me put it this way. I mean, you picked the right guy, because when it comes to the station, nobody puts out fires like he does.
He hates the drive to Towanda, but doesn't complain about going to Wellsboro.
Ever.
Go figure. Ever, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
He, too, also gets the concept of the police escort. Thanks so much, Doug. All right. All right. Let's get to Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Ben, welcome. It's really great to have you with us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I, when I'm not chasing James Franklin or Pat Chambers or Guy Gadowski around town, volunteer at the Paws Animal Shelter out on Trout Road outside of, over by the mall, I guess.
Yep.
And we normally take dogs from down south from a group called Freedom Fences, because they treat dogs in the south a little bit differently in terms of euthanasia and everything, and Paws is a non-euthanasia shelter. So we take them up, a few times a year. They get fostered out or adopted right away, so they don't even stay at Paws. And, the powers that be called each other up and said, hey, we got this hurricane coming in, and they had a lot of issues down there in terms of, what do you do with all these dogs, because there's flooding and a lot of those issues. So, we decided to bring them up, sort of an emergency transport. So a couple of people drove down. I was not one of them. I was here on the receiving end, but we brought in 11 dogs one day and then 4 the next. They all got fostered and adopted. It was a neat little thing. I've done it probably for a year and a half now working there, just because it's nice to get away from sports. I enjoy it. I enjoy talking about sports. I enjoy going to games. But the dogs don't ask you what you think about James Franklin. And that's a nice change of pace.
It is a nice change of pace. You said you received them. So did the dogs actually stay with you, or were you how does that part work, and then the fostering out?
Yeah, they all come up in a van, and then we foster them out from Paws. We've got people that foster a lot of our dogs, so they can go live somewhere before they get adopted. A lot of them, because we get a lot of puppies, have already been claimed by the time they get here.
Okay.
So they don't have to stay in shelter. They've already got homes for the most part. Some of the bigger ones might stay with us for a week or two. They come up, they find homes pretty quick, and it's a neat thing to see these dogs get out of that van after, a long day of sitting next to each other going, I guess we're in Pennsylvania now, and they seem to be, perfectly fine not to be rained on, although no one tell them that it's pouring today.
Yeah, but you know what? But what you and the others do is very, very special, and a lot of people, may not realize that that happens, because when we see natural disasters happen, we think about, obviously, the human toll, for obvious reasons, but there's also a great toll that happens on the animal population, and whatever you can do to help has been great, and we congratulate you for that. The football game itself. Now we're going to ask you about the James Franklin part. Since the dogs don't ask you about it, we will. So let's go along that route. You've seen 3 games now. How much better a football team do you think they are in 3 games compared to what you thought at the end of August?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt this is a better team than they were to start the year, and I don't think that them not even really struggling with App State, just having a game there, I don't think that was necessarily them being bad, but I think you're seeing them be a lot more cohesive offensively. They understand what they want to do a little bit better. They're doing it better defensively. I think they're still finding their stride, but everybody's getting experience and their legs underneath them. You know, I think it was always going to be this sort of early season for this team. I think there's too many new faces to expect them to come out and play like they ended last season, and like nobody left, and like Saquon never left, and like Deshaun and all of those guys that we've talked about ad nauseum have never left. But I think, you know, if you're James Franklin, you look at where this team was at the beginning of August, and you look at it where it is right now. Do you have questions that still need answered? Yeah. Do you have issues that still need to be addressed? Mm-hmm. Sure. But I think that, you know, realistically, this team is probably about as far along as it could have reasonably expected to be, given all the answers it had to face.
Is there a player or two that's maybe a little bit better at this stage than maybe you thought because you weren't sure about them going in?
You know, I mean, we've heard a million good things about KJ over the spring and over the summer, and he's one of those guys that sort of pops up last year in terms of, you know, they ask about who's doing well in practice and everything. But he, you know, you've seen him, I've seen him, everyone's seen him, and he's just a kid that he's doing everything he knows he's capable of, and it's so easy to do it in practice. It's a lot harder to do it in games, obviously, you know, this week, and in particular next week, you know, he's going to find out if he can do it against the big names. But, I, you know, KJ, you can't say enough good things about him, especially because sort of the opposite side of that, you know, I think everyone was kind of expecting Juwan Johnson to be the guy this year to carry the offense in terms of the receiving end while these guys all got their feet underneath them, and he really doesn't seem quite as engaged as he was last year. He's had some issues with drops. So KJ, you know, I don't think you can say enough good things about what he's done. I think Gross Matos has played well. I think, you know, Tariq Castro Fields has played well. You know, so I don't know if anyone has necessarily surprised me. I think mostly you're hearing about these guys being good, and then you're seeing them being good. And so often it can be a very large hill to climb to get it from the practice field to the Beaver Stadium field. But I think for the most part, you know, these guys have shown up as advertised.
Getting ready for a Friday night game, I mean, it's no big deal to me. I mean, it's just, you know, still the same amount of practices going in. So, I mean, a mature football team just accepts it, handles it, and goes. But how do you feel about the concept of Friday night football?
You know, I think I certainly understand why they're doing it, and I don't think the reasons that they're doing it are bad reasons, but I think, you know, there's a lot of high school football in the world. There's a lot of traveling in the world. I think, you know, as much as the line between whether these guys are amateur athletes or semi-pro athletes with the amount of time they put in and academics and whatnot, you know, James had talked about how, you know, their weeks are scheduled around Mondays or one of the days that these guys take a lot of classes. Now they got to practice on Monday. Then you sort of have that philosophical conflict. So I think it's a lot of work for the idea that we're gonna just going to play football on a night that's different and people are going to watch it and everyone's going to make money and be happy. You know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, in the NFL and in other sports, you're going to have short weeks, you're going to have long weeks, you're going to have travel. Yeah. But I think ultimately, you know, these guys are not all professional athletes. They're still learning how to take care of your bodies. I think if you can give them an extra day or at least get them a consistent number of days between games, you know, that's good for them as well. But at the same time, you know, these guys, even, you know, third or fourth string guys are some of the best athletes in the state, so, you know, it's not like this is new to them. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I'm sure it's not going to kill us all either to, you know, have a game on Friday.
The only thing I object to the Friday thing is because of the high school football part. Mature football team handles, you know, they practice, get it done, go to work, go out there, play the game, come back. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, and I think that's the attitude you have to take. The only thing that bothers me is that, you know, Friday nights for high school football. And now, doesn't affect here, obviously. I mean, it may affect some people maybe wanting to watch the game. It's going to be at 9 Eastern anyway. But I'm sure if you ask the Illinois high school football coaches, they're probably not enamored with the fact that Illinois is playing on a Friday night there.
Yeah, I mean, high school football really is one of those things that gets – it doesn't get overlooked, but I think people don't always appreciate how much everyone else cares about it too. So there's no doubt that, you know, especially in some of these states – where, you know, this is a big recruiting weekend or there's a lot of things to see. There's just people that want to watch those games. You know, now they've got to choose. And yeah, I think you look at StubHub and I think you can see how Illinois fans are picking right now. But that might have a lot more to do with the team they have to watch than the other ones they might have an opportunity to see.
And, Ben, I'm going to admit, I'm as guilty as anybody. I'll sit there on a Friday night and – doing the guy thing with the clicker on the remote. Ding, ding. Oh, there's a football game. I'll watch. So I'm as guilty as anybody of causing this because I'll say if it's on, I will sit there and watch it.
Yeah, no, I mean, the only difference between, you know, what I'm doing this Friday night and what I was doing last Friday night is I'm probably not going to have beer in the press box, but I'll be watching football either way. There's no doubt I'll be doing the same thing.
Yeah, the philosophical thing's the only part that gets you. The ability to play it, they're fine. That's not going to come into play here. But any thoughts on Illinois going into this game? What's your thoughts on this game?
The only highlight clip I've seen of Illinois so far was a fumble that went backwards and they lost 20 yards. So I feel like that coupled with the fact that, you know, Penn State's a 26-point favorite, I think it was, or maybe 23, either way. You know, I think you always, if you're Penn State, you know, you've always got to take these games seriously, especially with Ohio State around the corner. Weird things happen on the road in the Big Ten, regardless of who you're playing. But I think mostly, you know, this is another game where if Penn State loses, it's going to be because Penn State beat itself. And this seems to be a team that, for all the penalties they've taken to take points off of the board, you know, they're going to have to do that, you know, several times over, I think, for Illinois to have a real chance at them. But, you know, Lovie Smith's been in the league for a while. He knows what he's doing, or there's at least an argument to be made that he knows what he's doing, even if they're not winning. So, you know, you got to take it seriously.
Ben, congratulations to you and all those that helped out with the rescues. No, that's really important volunteer work, and it's something that a lot of people that love animals appreciate what you're doing. So thanks so much.
Yeah, well, if you ever need a dog, I know where you can get about 20 of them.
I have four in my house, Ben. right now, the lake that's being held in by the dam is full. All right. But thanks. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Yeah, Sean, and you saw all four of them on Saturday.
You betcha. You know, gave me a nice warm welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to kill you. All right, so.
Is that Uncle Sean forgot the treats again?
at least they thought they were attempting to. Their ability to was extremely limited. We'll come back next half hour. Matt Leon on Carson Wentz as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors and our good friends at Purdy Insurance. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And when it comes to your insurance needs, I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be, you want to make sure you're completely covered, but you also don't want to feel like you're getting ripped off. I mean, you want to feel like you're getting value, which means it's got to be at the right price. Well, Purdy Insurance will do the best they can to find you the best price possible and to make sure that you are completely covered. Oh, and if you have questions along the way, you need adjustments along the way, they are right there for you. They are your partners in all of this and more. It is Purdy Insurance, the best in the business. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Doug thinks I just make stuff up on the broadcast.
One time. Yeah, this time we got him. No.
Oh, come on. Come on, man.
Well, it's like you said. It was a stat that you... It was an instant recollection of a stat you brought up when Saquon had that great run in the Fiesta Bowl.
Well, I said it then, too.
You did. Yeah. It wasn't long ago.
It was the longest play from scrimmage in history of Penn State football. It didn't take me long to... And that one I just knew. For whatever reason, I knew. Because I think because of the Bill Belton thing, it was the longest ever. And this one came up, and... Well... And it's at the 5-yard line, so even I could figure it out. It might be slightly longer. But James was funny the postgame. I mean, when I brought it up to him, because he loves that stuff. He loves knowing the guys that he recruited are taking marks in the record book. He loves that part. You can't blame him. You know? And, well, maybe the Suey family's a little upset, you know, because Bob Higgins' name is crossed out. Because he's the one that was involved in the play with Bill Hess back in 1999 years ago. And that, of course, would be Larry, Paul, and Steve's grandfather, and Matt's grandfather. In fact, Larry Suey, Bob Higgins' grandson, lives two streets up from me here. So, I mean, I see Larry a lot. So, yeah. But other than that, most people be like, yeah, okay, fine. Take that mark. All right. Let's bring in Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, right out of the gate, they make Carson Wentz the starting quarterback the second he's available.
Glad to be with you.
Great to have back in the fold Carson Wentz. So he gets the start in week 3. The second he was cleared, they started him. Are you surprised by that in any way, shape, or form?
No, I'm not. And really, you had kind of heard back in the summer people kind of speculating that they didn't think it was going to be week 1, that, you know, week 3 or 4 was probably more realistic. And then this week leading up to the game with Tampa Bay, you really started to hear a pretty strong drumbeat and sourced reports from various outlets that week 3 was going to be it against the Colts. And they kind of, as you said, they didn't waste any time. You know, Doug Peterson's day after the game press conference was to start at noon at like 11:58. They tweeted that Wentz is back, and it really deflected a lot of the questions from an ugly loss in Tampa yesterday, that's for sure.
It was an ugly loss in Tampa. Why? You know, I'll preface that by saying let's give the Bucs credit because they made it that way. But from the Philadelphia point of view, why?
The defense really – well, they missed – ended up getting really beat up in the game. Mike Wallace, the wide receiver,
yes,
was hurt early. He's going to be out for a few weeks with a fibula fracture. They lost Jason Peters to a quad situation. Jay Ajayi hurt his back early in the game, did come back. But they really were shorthanded offensively. And obviously you – starting Foles at quarterback. He actually ended up having a pretty good game. He wasn't super sharp, but he was not the reason they lost. They struggled stopping the Bucs' passing game. I think we all saw that performance Tampa Bay put forth week 1 against the Saints, and it really did turn your head because they had Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback and not Jameis Winston. I think a lot of people thought that, well, that's just that leaky Saints defense, and, you know, Fitzpatrick got hot, but now, you know, this will be an adult swim this week with the Eagles, and we'll figure it out. And they did the exact same thing against the Eagles that they did against New Orleans. Spread the ball. All the wide receivers were involved. Set the tone early with that 75-yard touchdown to DeSean Jackson. I mean, I could have told you on Friday what the first play of the game was going to be. There was no doubt in my mind they were going to take a shot with Jackson up top. So I'm truly stunned and disappointed that the Eagles defense wasn't up for that challenge, because I think anyone that's paid any attention to anything knew that was going to be how they started things off. But got to give credit. Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing really, really well right now. And they're loaded on the outside, and that's what you saw. You just saw a defense that just couldn't get to Fitzpatrick consistently, number one. And when, you know, he's allowed to sit back there and let these guys run their routes, 402 yards, four touchdowns is what you're going to get.
How concerning is it that Jason Peters is out again? And is there a concern that about his ability to hold up?
I think you've just got a concern just because, you know, he's playing a strenuous position at left tackle and he's, you know, 36, 37. I don't think there's a concern. I would anticipate him being back for this week. It just seemed like something they couldn't quite get going during the game after he got banged up. But I think any time you got a player this age at that position, you know, as you saw in the week one in the Atlanta, you know, he was phenomenal. When he's healthy, he's still remarkably playing at a ridiculous level for his age. But this is probably just kind of be some of the trade-off here. If you're going to, you know, put your eggs in that basket, which I don't kill the Eagles for doing, you've just got to be ready that, you know, he might not be able to bounce back from some stuff that when he, like he did when he was 26, 27.
Right, defensively, you know, defense was part of the big reason why the Eagles ended up where they ended up a year ago. How concerning was it to watch them play that way in that game yesterday?
It was concerning, and what's interesting is I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I saw somebody put together some numbers that the Eagles defense under Schwartz has really struggled in road games. And I was thinking about that just off the top of my head. And you think back last year, you know, obviously they played the whole playoff run at home.
Yes.
So the defense played really well. But you look at their road games, if you want to consider the Super Bowl a road game, you know, they gave up like 600 yards in that game. Everybody forgets because they won, obviously.
Yeah.
You think about the game against the Rams. It was a shootout. You know, the game that Wentz got hurt. Think about the first game they played after Wentz got hurt on the road against the Giants. You know, they had to withstand a barrage of touchdown passes from a Giants team that was out of the playoffs. So there seems to be a real disparity of the splits defensively, home and road. What could be behind that? I don't know. I'm still not worried big picture, but I think that was some cold water in the face yesterday that, you know, maybe that unit has more work to do than we thought, because that was not pretty yesterday. You know, when you combine not being able to get to the quarterback with not being able to cover, it's a deadly combination.
You mentioned concerning. What boxes weren't checked yesterday that they've got to clean up here in a short period of time?
I think be able to, on defense or overall?
On defense, I mean.
On defense, I mean, they got to get to the quarterback more. They had two sacks yesterday, but for the most part, Ryan Fitzpatrick was just able to sit back there. Maybe a little better tackling. There were some missed tackles that hurt them in that game. I will say they did play the run well, Tampa Bay. Not that they, you know, really tried to grind it out, but they didn't ever establish much of a running game. But I think number one would be the pass rush. I was surprised at how little they were able to generate against that Tampa offensive line that I don't think is one of the better offensive lines in the NFL.
Okay, so give me a feel for this week's game.
I think there's going to be a lot of excitement, a lot of energy with Wentz coming back.
Yeah.
The Colts are one of those teams I don't think anybody's too sure what they are yet. You know, there's probably about 20 teams every year in the NFL that you have to kind of get through September, I think, till you get a good feel for who's for real and who's not, or not even for real, but who is maybe better than you thought or worse than you thought. And I think the Colts are one of those teams. You know, that's a nice win on the road yesterday against Washington, but I don't think Washington's any great shakes. You know, where's Andrew Luck? Is he playing his first football in what seems like forever? So it's probably a pretty good opponent for Wentz to come back against. A little nondescript. It'll be at home, but it will be interesting. You know, if Ryan Fitzpatrick is able to do that to that defense, you know, Andrew Luck's probably a better quarterback than Ryan Fitzpatrick. So it's something to be on alert for. But the focus this week is going to be on one person and one person only, and that's Carson Wentz and his return.
Sure.
And that how he goes is how the season goes, I think, really.
You did Penn and Bucknell on Saturday. How do you feel about Penn right now?
It was interesting. The defense was much better than I thought. The offense was a little up and down, as you would expect for week one, and as you would expect having a kid making his first start at quarterback, Ryan Glover. It's not often you're able to turn the ball over five times and win going away, as they won 34-17, but they were able to take advantage of some Bucknell mistakes early, get out to an early 17-0 lead, and really dictate from there. I think they're going to be okay. I come out of that game probably feeling better about the season, big picture for them, just because the defense, specifically the pass rush, was so much better than it was a year ago.
What did you think of Bucknell?
I thought they kind of got – if you look at that game, at one point early in the first quarter, they had more turnovers than they had plays from scrimmage. They threw an interception on the first play of the game, and then on the ensuing kickoff after Penn took it in for a touchdown, they fumbled the kick. And then their next drive ended when they got a punt block at their own 5-yard line. So, you know, some big mistakes, and it was 17-0. You kind of take that away, and the game was pretty even. They struggled offensively. They didn't have any really big money plays offensively. When they were able to move the ball, it had to be in, 4, 5, 8 yards at a time. But once they kind of got on even footing and were able to defend the whole field and force Penn to go the length of the field, the defense was much better. I think that would have been an interesting game to see how it would have played out if Bucknell didn't just turn it over, have the two turnovers and the block punt right out of the gate, because that really kind of set the tone for everything.
Yeah, because I think when you look at Bucknell, at least at this stage, I mean, things may change. Their defense actually is pretty good, and they have they have a lot of pressure on their defense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The defense, like I said, I think Penn's first touchdown drive, they scored 17 points, and I think the drives were something like 28 yards minus 5 and 5. They were just put in a tough spot, and they did a pretty good job. Like I said, they were facing the quarterback in Glover, who had never started a game. So a lot of moving pieces yesterday, but I think Buck, they'll be tough in the Patriots. They will be tough in the Patriots.
Hey, appreciate the time as always, Matt. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Wrap it up in a moment, as only we can, on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Another like on the Facebook page from Brad Harvey. Brad, thank you. Appreciate that very much. The only complaint they have on the Facebook page is there's a picture of a guy on there and scares people. All right. Oh, wait, that's me. Great to have you with us on the show today. Again, Carson Wentz, by the way, is going to start. You'll hear that on Eagle 107. And it's also been another big day, by the way, where we found out that a member of the staff is out there putting out fires.
Yes.
Now, these aren't fires that benefit anybody.
No.
No. So, he's just putting out fires. Doesn't that bring with it a feeling of self-importance that... Yeah, so I go to the Facebook page and I see the suit holding the flag on the Craig Fogle putt on 13.
Oh, yeah.
Notice one person's cheering. That would be me. The other person's holding the flag and saying something, "I wish that was me." What does that mean? I don't know.
Oh, here we go. You'll love this.
Yeah.
So we were talking. You had a chance to catch up with Tim Brando on a Saturday morning before kick.
Timmy B,
on almost 30 years, first time back at Happy Valley in close to 30 years to call the game. He is available tomorrow at 4:06 Eastern time to join us tomorrow.
Well, good. This is going to go about the same way as it did on Saturday morning, because the two of us stood there and reminisced for a half an hour. Finally got Spencer Tillman involved. And Spencer's an awesome guy. I mean, and I think Tim, there's certain guys out there that when you hear them on a game, you feel like the game is more important And to be honest with you, it might be more important than it really is, but he makes it sound like it's really important. I think the world of Tim Brando. I like him a lot. At one point, he started like looking over his shoulder. I said, "Are you okay, Tim?" He goes, "Yeah, where's that suit guy?"
No.
I said, "Not here." He said, and Spencer Tillman chimed in and said, "I think he's putting out fires, Tim."
Well, it's great with Brando. He has such a terrific not and you fall into this category too, a football and basketball acumen, just very knowledgeable with both, and it's always a great listen, especially with him and Mike Jamisky. Sometimes you know him and the G-Man. You don't get a chance all that often here in Pennsylvania to see his ACC calls on Raycom, but well, you catch a few from time to time.
He and I were reminiscing about Sam Licklider, right? And of course, Tim did the game with Bill Raftery, that game with Indiana back in 1993. So I did the radio, and Tim was doing TV with Raf. So I mentioned that the next time Licklider came back was a year later to do a preseason game at Rec Hall. And unfortunately, Sam started getting like chest pressure. So I had to call the paramedics in to see him. He's okay, thank goodness. And Tim says, "Well, gosh, Steve," he says, I was so critical of him. I said, "Tim, don't worry about it." He says, because as he was laying there, he was talking to the paramedics, he kept mentioning Raf's name. So, Tim had a great conversation. We had a great conversation. And so he's going to be on tomorrow at 4:06. I'm thrilled to have him on.
Can't wait.
My regard for him is as high as it gets. He's a great guy.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.